The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. I'm glad we can all be together today, sitting, keeping quiet. As we know, unless we're in a deep fog, there's a lot stirring on this planet, not on just in the United States, but on this planet, everywhere, of restlessness. So I wanted to just bring that in as a presence today. And thinking of all that's happening and all the people everywhere doing something for something. I printed this out during rest practice because it came to my mind as kind of a poem that I love that sort of sums this up in a good way by Pablo Neruda. He was a Chilean poet. Many of you know of him. One of the interesting fun facts about Pablo Neruda is he always wrote with a green pen because he loved the environment and plants so much that he always wrote in green. But he has this poem that I've often used. It's been a while, called Keeping Quiet. He says, "Now we will count to 12. And we will all keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales. And people gathering salt would not look at their hurt hands. Those who prepare green wars, wars with gas, wars with fire, victories with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk with their siblings in the shade, doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it is about. I want no truck with death. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt this sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us, and when everything seems dead and later proves to be alive." I changed some of the pronouns. The Dalai Lama is turning 90 or 92. Does anybody remember? 90, I think. Yeah. And he says, "I have one message. We have to learn how to get along." That's it. He said, "We have to learn how to get along." Not so easy. So I wanted to speak a little bit about, I didn't have anything really lined up here, but about Maitri, about metta, metta, like metta with ourselves. You know, Audre Lorde, I think, was the first to speak about being kind to ourselves, taking care of ourselves as political. So metta in Pali, Maitri in Sanskrit, essentially the same concept, refers to loving kindness, friendliness, benevolence, befriending. I remember my teacher once saying, "We have to befriend ourselves." What is it to be our friend, befriending ourselves? the sincere wish for our own well-being. This is why we say the immeasurables first for ourself. May I be well. May I be free from suffering, not as self-indulgence, but this is important. We can't go much further if it's not starting here. Do we really wish for our own friendliness, our well-being, our own happiness? For real, deeply. How much we feel like we're not enough, and how that carries over to practice. And so our Zazen, of course, reveals this restlessness that we have with ourself, wrestling with ourself. Some of us have thoughts of wanting to get up and leave, and we do. Most of us just stay. We learn how to stay. The moon was full this week. It was called a strawberry moon, somebody told me. But it really teaches us how to stay. It's always there. It's always out. But our bodies wiggle and squirm as we sit here. Our minds go far away. It can be so uncomfortable. We're, as Pema said, we're a species that does not like much discomfort. I think she's right on. Always seeking it. And we might sometimes feel it's impossible to stay. Just stay. Stay in presence. Or usually at that point, we start the strategies going. If there was an orchestra, it would kind of be like the Jaws music, right? Da-dun, 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 da-dun. Something uncomfortable. Da-dun, 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 da-dun. And then the strategies start. Right? How will we get away from it? And it's really important to have this feeling of wanting to go, I think. But how do we befriend that feeling that doesn't want to stay? And I don't know if it's just American practitioners in particular that need understanding about feeling and responding in kindness to ourselves, or if that's universal. It's probably universal, but it feels like more so here. I don't know why. I don't know everywhere else. But there's some people I talk to from other places who it's not even on their mind. And Dalai Lama would say, like, how can we not want to be not like ourselves when there isn't one? He really doesn't get it. Like, we have no self-respect. He's like, or dislike ourselves. He doesn't understand how that even goes together, because he understands that there's nothing there in that way that we understand it. Buddha teaches about feeling, is vedana in Pali, how it's different from emotion. And by the way, whenever Buddha teaches, Buddha's always giving us a way to practice. There's always a teaching on whatever we're dealing with. But he speaks about feeling being different from emotion, in that he says feeling, this is probably not him, but feeling is an affective tone to an experience, the hedonic quality. So whether it feels pleasant or unpleasant or neither, it's distinct from emotions, which involve a more complex process of thinking and feeling. So this is that bare kind of effective quality of an experience, which we find maybe either pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. Sometimes we call the unpleasant feeling Mara, the tempter, the threatening to upend our peace. It's unpleasant. And usually that thing is the very thing that will free us. Whatever's coming up, that's the very thing that will free us. So what's our top 10 strategies? Take a moment. What's your got to get away strategies? Avoiding, stressing, suppressing, escaping, soothing, controlling, disengaging, fixing, indulging. And problem with strategies is, as I see it, they're effective for a very short time. So we have memories, fantasies, plans. It's really hard sometimes to stay with just the, somebody was saying today, the nakedness of experience. They were speaking about this nakedness of experience. Kind of goes against the grain of being, staying present. And these are the times when gentleness, sometimes a sense of humor or a lightness, can give us strength to settle down. My teacher would say, take the Dharma seriously, but not yourself, because there isn't one. And that was dropped in at a moment where I was so ready to hear that, and the timing was so perfect. I remember I burst out laughing. It just cut right through something. And then I started crying. So we stay, we stay, we stay. Pema writes in places that scare you, she writes, the staying is, she has a chapter on staying. It's one of the pith instructions in training. Learning to stay with ourselves in meditation is like training a dog. If we train a dog by beating it, we'll end up with an obedient but very inflexible and rather terrified dog. The dog may obey when we say, stay, come, roll over, sit up, but will also be neurotic and confused. By contrast, training with kindness results in someone who is flexible and confident, who does not become upset when situations are unpredictable and insecure. So if we wander off, listen to how you bring yourself back. What's the tone of how you return? Are you a tyrant, a negative mother? Are you the one who gently encourages herself to stay, settle down? Maybe we should consider the latter, the gentle one who encourages ourselves to stay. That kind of approach would be metta, loving kindness. So if we're experiencing restlessness, encourage ourselves, stay. Discursive mind, stay. Aching knees, aching back, throbbing, stay. What's for lunch? What's for dinner? Stay. When are the cookies coming? Stay. What am I doing here? Stay. Can't stand this another minute. Stay. That's how we cultivate steadfastness. Because our mind always wants to go away in those discomfort moments. What was it, the Clash that used to sing, should I stay or should I go? I really want to know. There was a movie called Young at Heart. We should all watch this. And this guy started a band with octogenarians. So everyone had to be 80 or older. And they were all formed this choir. A choir. And so this woman who's 95 from Germany was singing this Clash song. She's 95 and she's there in a t-shirt. Should I stay or should I go? I really want to know. It was beautiful. It was a great movie, really. I showed it to my parents to see if it was really effective, and they liked it. So sometimes I'll offer metta practice for people who are extremely critical to themselves in Zazen for long periods of time. Like you can't get out of it. Like you just sit there and just go after yourself like a Pac-Man. Everything you do, chomp, 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 chomp. May I be well, whatever their words are. May I be well. May I be at peace. May I not suffer. Just to bring that into the sitting. Because we could all do a number on ourselves. And some of us, you know, to greater or different degrees. And you might now be like resistant to even hearing this. No, I don't. So how to practice and embody being kind, loving, and compassionate with whatever appears. Every appearance in the mind. Really? Yeah. We're trying to understand what they are. I found this beautiful writing by Sukhni from a retreat that I did with him. And he's speaking about what is the nature of appearances. The very experiences we're having right now, from a screen before our eyes to the thoughts in our minds, are not obstacles to awakening, but wisdom appearances waiting to be recognized. So that all appearances are wisdom arising. We spend so much energy trying to fix or change what appears, yet these teachings reveal that appearances themselves have never been the problem, only our grasping at them is solid and separate, as the Buddha says in the Second Noble Truth. The practice is surprisingly simple yet radical. We're not trying to see something different or overlay a spiritual view on reality. Rather, one, as Pema Khandro beautifully expressed, getting familiar with the true nature of appearances to be wisdom appearances and not just mentally projected dualistic appearances. Like ice naturally melting into water, our confused perceptions don't need to be battled or suppressed. Through patient recognition, what seems solid and problematic reveals its natural, fluid, luminous nature. The cleansing happens by itself, not through rejection, but through recognition. So to be clear about metta, and so we don't come away with a misunderstanding, it's not some kind of indulgence which weakens us. We're less open, less able to be open with ourself and our difficulties to life, but more open to that. So, you know, going to a spa or a bath or a dance or something could be one of our strategies, but it could be metta. Only we know. Only we know. We have to discern that. Pema uses this definition. Metta strengthens us. One of the qualities of metta is steadfastness, which is developed through Zazen, through the boredom, the aches, the indigestion, the disturbing memories, edgy energy, peaceful meditation, sleepiness. It's steadfastness. We sit with ourselves and we move closer to ourselves, no matter what's going on, not trying to get rid of anything. Also in the news this week was an interesting piece by Jacinda Ardern. She was the former prime minister of New Zealand. You remember her? And she resigned because she was getting so much flack and pushback from other aspects of the government there. She resigned in 2023. So recently she came out with a book called A Different Kind of Power. And I was just so surprised to hear this. It says, A Different Kind of Power makes the case that leading with empathy and kindness might be the solution for a range of global crises. What it is like to lead a country through multiple crises, including a live stream terrorist attack in Christchurch. Yeah, so what she writes about, what is it to lead with empathy and kindness? Like, that might be the solution to a range of global crises. Like, I just found that, like, fascinating. Like, that's a new book. Like, and that, like, we didn't know this? Or this was, like, not what anyone thought of? She also writes what it's like to govern as a woman, not at first in her country, but still a rarity on the global stage. And as a mother, she was the second world leader to have a baby while in office. And she used to have the baby there at her board meetings and stuff in the crib. And she says, leading with empathy and kindness is a choice anyone can make. Glad we're getting the news. Dogen speaks of, Joan's been reading Instructions for the Cook, Tenzo Kyuken, and he speaks in there about different kinds of mind that we can cultivate, a joyful mind, a magnanimous mind, and a parental mind. And this parental mind, Dogen calls it Robai Shin, which is translated as grandmother mind or parental mind. So cultivating a profound sense of compassion, kindness, and selflessness, and that we can learn this through handling food and working in the kitchen. So I heard she was reading it to Seifu, he was cooking too. So we can still have sadness, suchness, frustrated suchness, angry suchness, whole gamut of feelings, of emotions that we might be feeling. And we can see that they're suchness, they're momentary. They're a momentary coming together in our karmic stream as that. And if we don't grasp it, it will move on. Right? But if we hold it, we're just going to get deeper and deeper into it. I recognize when my emotions intensify, usually there's fear there. That's the feeling of it. There's fear. Fears are always lurking. And in Zazen, we practice dropping whatever story we're telling ourselves and leaning into the emotions and fear gradually, gradually. If we can. And I was talking to Paula Josa Jones, who just did a retreat on the somatic body and authentic movement. She said, I'd tell people, just find a place where there's no fear in your body, like a pinky or your kneecap or a toe. Just go there. Go there and settle. Thus we train in opening the field for heart to the restlessness of our own energy. We learn to abide without abiding in the experience, direct experience of our emotional distress. Very powerful. And then we come back to the present moment. That is the present moment. And that effort to return or just let go at some point is a light touch, kind of like a touch and go, a drive-through. We touch the thoughts by acknowledging them as thinking and then let them go. It's a way of relaxing our struggle, like touching a bubble with a feather. Yeah. A non-aggressive approach to being here. How many of us get so mad when our mind goes away for a minute? I hear such hard, like, battle stories, and I'm glad I hear it because for so many years in my practice, you think you're the only one doing that, you know, and then I hear as a teacher the battle stories, and I'm like, oh gosh, yes, yes. So when we cultivate metta towards ourselves, we're also generating equanimity. It's the four immeasurables, the four Brahmaviharas. Able to be with ourselves, our world, without getting caught in four or against, without judging things as right or wrong, even though there are in a relative world, but without getting caught up in our opinions and beliefs, solidly held views of ourselves, of the world. Pema says unconditional friendliness and training is being able to settle down with ourselves without labeling our experience as good or bad. We don't need to become too dramatic or despairing about what we see in ourselves. We don't. If we could clearly see for 1 week and then boom, all our bad habits are gone, we're entirely free of suffering, this would be the best-selling thing on the planet. We'd be packed, better than any drug, any spa. But remember, we've been developing, however old you are, that's how long it's being developed, certain habits. And if you believe in reincarnation or consciousness being continuous, we're looking at many, 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 many more years of conditioning of these habits. So this is our chance. This is this little short human life that we have is an incredible opportunity. So think about how you want to use your time. And sometimes that presses against the habit, because we're doing things that we don't really want to do. At least I find that. That's the habit energy. And to break that, steadfastness, staying, being able to support ourselves, be friendly in the direction we want to go in. And knowing over time, they do dissolve. That's the good news. We don't actually get rid of anything. It just dissolves. I mean, think about yourself a few years ago and things that you thought, oh my God, this is it. Like, I'm just like this. This is me. And it's like, not like now you can't even think that way. It's like, it's not even close. It's like, God, how did I ever think that? You ever have that? I see some heads nodding. If you're mean to yourself, stay right there. Let it dissolve. I tell people not to say I still. There are sessions in Zazen where I deal with a lot of stress, heavy emotions, the whole period. It's true. However, after all these years, it's definitely more settled. It can appear. I see its appearance. So I hope you're glad to know this. Definitely it settles and dissolves. If I sit down and my mind is going wild and I'm worried about something, I can touch into the settledness, to the still point. That is much stronger. I can feel with my mind, my body, and my life. That grows much stronger than the habit. So we know our life is a succession of it's lousy, it's great. It's agreeable, it's disagreeable. It's joyous and blissful, it's sad. Being with this, continual succession of agreeable and disagreeable, with an open heart, with an open spirit, with an open mind. This is really essential teachings for our time, I think. In this time of information overload and the anxiety that creates. And some of us were talking about artificial intelligence, Use your own. It's for real. Don't look it up. Sometimes it helps. We know this. But let's dig a little deeper and not chat with what we should be doing. IMHO, in my humble opinion. That's what that stands for. Every moment of confusion, let it be a doorway. Every challenging appearance, an opportunity to recognize wisdom is present. We're not seeking to escape our world, but to recognize its true nature. And in that recognition, discover what we've been searching for has been right here all along, hidden only by a habit of looking somewhere else. Now I'll count to 12 and we keep quiet and I will go.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.